The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, it's Monday, October 22nd. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal right now to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. First off today, a big congratulations to our free stuff winner from Friday who got a Delta 9 clothing hot box t-shirt. We sent out those emails today and to our free stuff winners last week. Big congratulations to everyone who got a poster or a t-shirt. We're going to have another free stuff giveaway starting tomorrow and all week long featuring Normal Conference 2007 posters, t-shirts, all kinds of good stuff here on the Audio Stash. And speaking of the conference, the audio is coming online now on the Normal Events feed. Right now, you can listen to Rick Steves' complete keynote speech on Friday, October 12th. It's right up there on the Normal Events podcast. You can link up to that on iTunes and www.norml.org/podcast. We also have Tommy Chong's appearance at Friday's awards ceremony at the Normal Conference. Really a great talk from Tommy Chong there, a very unique talk from Tommy. That's available in full on the Normal Events podcast as well. We'll be posting complete panels, complete speeches all week long on the Normal Events podcast, so make sure you go up to iTunes and subscribe today. And in conference audio today, we're going to have our sit-down interview with Dr. Robert Malamede from the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. Dr. Bob has his own podcast, Dr. Bob's Cannabuzz. We have links to his page and his podcast right up at normalaudiostash.com. His area of specialty is the endocannabinoid system, and he's done a lot of research in this area. Also today in the program, an important interview with Normal's senior policy analyst, Paul Armentano. We're going to talk about the many articles Paul writes and gets published in newspapers and on the internet, and Paul's going to give us all a few tips on how to get marijuana-centered topics published in newspapers and online. Very important interview today with Paul. We have links to a lot of his articles right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Let's open up the stash today with our sit-down interview at the Normal Conference with Dr. Robert Malamede. I'm here at the Normal Annual Conference in beautiful Los Angeles here. It's October 13th, where we're here with Dr. Robert Malamede from the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, really one of the world's leading cannabinoid researchers. Dr. Bob, welcome back to the podcast.
How you doing? I would dispute world's leading research. I don't do enough of the hardcore bench work to fall into that category. I just think a lot about pot and what getting high is and what it does to you.
Right on. Right on. What have been the biggest developments for you, and what are people most, you know, when you circulate here at the conference with people involved with the movement, what are people most interested in?
Well, a lot. In terms of where I'm coming from, the latest thing that I've come up with in an effort to understand how is it possible that we have a plant that has anti-aging qualities and inhibits all these age-related illnesses and actually helps promote health. How is it conceivable that for 60 years, 70 years, It's been illegal, you know. And now that there's such an overwhelming amount of science that continuously comes out in the public domain, peer-reviewed science, just go and read it, you know. How is it possible for our government to maintain this dogmatic, blind opposition despite all facts, facts both from a scientific level and facts from the citizens, we the people? How is that possible? So my explanation is what I'd actually like to talk about, because I find it very entertaining and interesting. So cannabinoids regulate everything in your body, and among the things they regulate are open-mindedness, your ability to relearn, because that's what open-mindedness is. You have a perspective, you have an understanding, new information comes in, and you change your perspective. That's what open-mindedness is, and cannabinoids wind up regulating that process. So it's inevitably true that in a population, you're going to have people who have an average level of cannabinoid activity with respect to the particular property of open-mindedness. Some are going to be above the level, and some are going to be below the level. The people who are below are going to tend to look backwards, because the future requires rewiring as you relearn. If you look backwards, you don't have to deal with that. And if you're not biochemically equipped to deal with it, then you're going to not tend to go into the future. You're going to actually tend to go backwards. People who are looking backwards will agree with one another because they're looking at the world through the lens of what has happened. Whereas people who look into the future look more in terms of the inquisitiveness of the unknown and the acknowledgement of the variability that everybody will have, and therefore kind of agreeing to disagree. But they won't have unity. So who is more likely to get into power? The backwards-looking people. And that's what we suffer from. We suffer from a government of cannabinoid-defective people who are trying to essentially form kind of gentle genocide by locking up the people who have the opposite genetics, basically. We're looking really at a genetic war right now between cannabinoid-endowed and cannabinoid, relatively speaking, defective people with respect to open-mindedness. And this has tremendous implications because man's ability to impact on his environment changes the world. We see this in terms of global warming, pollution, a whole slew of effects. We have to be able to take that data and change policy, which means that minds have to change and adapt to new information. If we don't do that, it's very likely that we're going to have collapses of various sorts in terms of the stability of the system that we've come to call home, you know, globally in terms of weather, etc. So it may very well be that the outcome of this genetic battle between cannabinoid-endowed and cannabinoid-deficient people may determine the survival of mankind. Whether or not we can replace leaders who are totally incapable of understanding facts because they're too busy with faith, and we have to replace them with people so that we have appropriate attempts, at least, at proper analysis of information that's unbiased by political crap and that can really serve mankind.
As a scientist in academia as well, I mean, politics and science have, their relationship have come to a head really in the last few years. Stem cell research, genetic research, the issues with marijuana, especially here in this country. Are we seeing a transition with that? I mean, are people more aware of politics and science being interrelated with the drug companies and the like? I mean, has that at least brought on an awareness, do you think?
I think that that's slowly coming to be, that people are awakening more. I mean, just think about it. You pick up a Reader's Digest, it's almost all advertisements for drug companies. You know, you watch television, it's all advertisements for drug companies. There's billions and billions of dollars that are tied up in providing drugs that can really help people, but on the other hand, are expensive and often really have significant side effects. So we have, again, everything backwards because of our government being populated by the wrong kind of mentalities. Marijuana should be the drug of choice, the first drug you try because of its safety profile and its inexpense and its functionality. And if that works, then you don't have to go and try things that are a lot typically more dangerous with more consequences. So we are, again, being totally disserved. And one of the things that may change that is as older people start to realize that cannabis can really help so many of their illnesses, they're a voting block, and they'll spread the word among themselves. We will win this battle because we are telling the truth and the government is lying. The question is whether we can replace cannabinoid defective people with cannabinoid effective people. And we need a certain amount of cannabis activity in the world to promote the movement of human consciousness. And that's been suppressed by having fascist, narrow-minded, cannabinoid-defective people to the nth degree, as we now have with this, you know, with this Bush regime.
We're here at the opposite end of that spectrum at the normal conference. No one is cannabis defective at the normal annual conference, even most of the hotel staff. So,
but that's actually not totally true, because we are all partially cannabinoid defective because of its anti-aging properties. You see, we want to be able to enhance the slowdown of the aging process, and that's what cannabis seems to do from a biochemical point of view. And it's something that we can't evolve quick enough in order to give us like the mental flexibility for social change as well as the health, because we're dying now in this country from age-related illnesses. So we can't rely on evolution. We have to rely on the herb. So basically, I think science is now telling us that we must consume more cannabis.
Doctor, this has been great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Robert Malamede sitting down with us at the Normal 2007 conference on October 13th. We have links to Dr. Bob's homepage and his own podcast, Dr. Bob's Cannabuzz, right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Stay tuned. Normal Senior Policy Analyst Paul Armentano coming up next.
This is Soljah, Soldiers of Jarmy, and you're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Big up yourself.
In a moment, we're going to have our interview with Paul Armentano, going a little bit over the Normal conference, but really focusing on how to get marijuana-centered topics published in mainstream media and on websites out there. To give you an example of what Paul does, we're going to read one of his most recent articles. Here's the title, 10 Million Americans Busted for Pot, Enough is Enough. This is available on the website Alternet. We have a link to it at normalaudiostash.com. Here's the piece. What would cops do without weed? For one thing, they'd sure spend a lot less time arresting and processing petty pot violators. How much time? For starters, however long it took to bust the estimated 739,000 Americans arrested for minor pot possession in 2006. That's according to the FBI's Uniform Crime Report, which reported last week that a record 829,625 Americans were arrested for violating marijuana laws last year. Of those arrested, 89% of those were charged with simple pot possession, the highest annual total ever recorded and nearly three times the number of citizens busted 15 years ago. Yet to hear local law enforcement spin it, busting small-time potheads isn't their priority. The record number of busts, they claim, is simply a reflection that record numbers of Americans are now smoking pot. But don't tell drug czar John Walters that. After all, the czar has claimed earlier this month at a press conference announcing the release of the Federal Office of Applied Studies, or OAS, 2006 National Survey on Drug Use and Health, that pot use has been declining for the better part of the past 5 years. Predictably, both cops and the drug czar playing fast and loose with the facts. Yes, in fact, more Americans are now admittedly consuming pot today than in 1991, so much for the past 15 years of the so-called war on drugs. But this increase is hardly proportional to the dramatic spike in overall pot arrests. As for Walter's comments, while the survey did indeed report a minor decline in adolescent self-reported use of pot, it further reported a minor uptick in the total number of Americans who report using marijuana regularly, from 14.6 million in 2005 to 14.8 million in 2006. Of course, a less than 2% increase in pot users from 05 to 06 doesn't explain why pot arrests jumped more than 5% from the then-record 786,545 to today's total, or why the overall number of annual pot arrests has gone up every consecutive year but two for the past 16 years. Perhaps the explanation is twofold. It's plausible that the federal government is, and always has, greatly underestimated the number of Americans who use pot. Does anyone really believe that cops are busting on average 5% of all pot smokers each year? It's also plausible that an outgrowth of the ever-growing number of cops on the street and citizens' increasing number of interactions with them is inevitably leading to more and more pot arrests. However, regardless of the explanation, it seems remiss for the police and politicians not to acknowledge this growing trend and its burdensome fiscal and perhaps even cultural implications. The bottom line, since 1990, over 10.4 million Americans, predominantly young people under age 30, have been busted for pot. Thousands have been disenfranchised. Tens of thousands have been unnecessarily sent to drug treatment. Hundreds of thousands have lost their eligibility for student aid. And perhaps an entire generation or two has been alienated to believe that the police are an instrument of their oppression rather than their protection. These are the tangible results of the government's stepped-up war on pot, results that go beyond the FBI's record numbers, and it's high time that politicians and the general public begin taking notice. That was Paul Armentano's piece appearing on Alternet. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Paul Armentano serves as Normal's senior policy analyst, and he is a prolific writer on the subjects of marijuana science and marijuana law reform. His articles appear across the country in newspapers and online at some of the highest traffic websites, such as Alternet and the Huffington Post. We just heard Paul's piece from October, and he's got almost a dozen such articles published recently. Paul also writes and edits publications from the Normal Foundation, such as the landmark information book, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. We have links to view the book online at normalaudiostash.com. Paul also helps us nearly every day with scripts and information right here on the Audio Stash. Paul, welcome back to the show today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Paul, it's always a great pleasure to have you here on the program. We're going to talk today about your writing and perhaps offer some tips for activists out there and how to get their own articles published. Let's begin today, though, by talking about the Normal Conference a bit. You hosted one of the most talked about panels at the conference dealing with legislative reform in the gathering in Los Angeles on the 12th and 13th of October. And this conference really did attract almost everyone in the top of the legal reform movement, such as Ethan Nadelman from the Drug Policy Alliance and the senior staff at the Marijuana Policy Project. It really was a great gathering.
Sure. I think one of the things that people appreciate when they attend a Normal Conference is the fact that virtually everyone who's anyone in this movement gathers at these conferences, and Normal gives everyone from all sides of the issue and all sorts of different groups the opportunity to speak. And I think the people who attend really enjoy that showing of unity and the opportunity to meet with all these individuals in one place.
And Paul, what were some of the presentations that caught your eye in particular there?
Sure. I thought Matthew Robinson's presentation was an incredibly powerful and persuasive PowerPoint, and I think that the attendees really enjoyed that. I would encourage anybody, if they have the opportunity, to download that presentation either on YouTube or hopefully at some point from Normal's site, to do so. Professor Mitch Earlywine's presentations, sort of debunking the myths that marijuana causes mental illness, were also quite informative. He also gave later during the day an excellent program advising parents how they can best communicate with their teens, not only about marijuana, but really just how they can open up the lines of communication in general. And coming from a parent like he is with the experience of raising two children, I thought that was an excellent and very valuable presentation as well.
Now, while there was a lot of work going on, the conference also offered up some social gatherings for the activists and advocates. Tommy Chong stopped by the awards Friday night. That was pretty cool.
You know, I'll say something about Tommy Chong and his presentation Friday night. Well, you know, most people are very familiar with Tommy Chong and his stand-up act and his comedy and his movie work. Tommy Chong gave a very serious, heartfelt presentation Friday night talking about prohibition, talking about his experience in prison. And I thought it was actually a very enlightening and eye-opening presentation. He got to present a very different side of himself that most of the public has never seen. And frankly, that for me was actually one of the highlights of the conference.
Righto, and everyone can hear Tommy's talk at the Normal Conference and the October 13th Audio Stash. We also have it posted on the Normal Events podcast at normal.org/podcast. Now, Paul, let's talk about your writing, which has really had a big impact on the issue of marijuana science and legal reform around the country. Paul, you're recognized by the media and those within the movement as one of our most important authors. Some recent article headlines include, "New studies expose government lies about medical pot. Smoking pot won't make you crazy, but dealing with the lies about it will. The pot smokers who the government say don't exist." And in that piece, you print some of the many, many emails you get from medical marijuana patients. And your most recent, which we just presented, 10 million Americans busted for pot, enough is enough. Paul, let's start by asking how you approach these websites, newspapers, and publications in getting marijuana-centered pieces presented.
Well, you know, there's different ways to go about it. And, you know, for every one or two op-eds you get published, you submit five or six that get ignored. So, you know, one of the arguments I would advise people is simply to be prolific. Try and get that message out there in front of as many editors as possible, and some of them will take it seriously. Of course, it always helps when there is some timely hook for you to use. Most of the op-eds that you just talked about were commentaries responding to current events. In the case of Pot Won't Make You Crazy, But the Lies About It Will, Dr. Mitch Earlywine and I were responding to a barrage of recent media coverage of this notion that somehow smoking marijuana even once will make you crazy. We know that wasn't the case, and it was an excellent opportunity for us to rebut this sort of new reefer madness. In the case of the 10 million arrests, once again, we were sending that and pitching that op-ed just shortly after the FBI had released its latest uniform crime report, and once again, we had a timely hook to pin the op-ed on. Now, that's not always going to be the case, but I certainly do think with editors, it does help if marijuana, at the time you're sending your op-ed, is in the news.
Also, Paul, you have a designated space at the Huffington Post, which is one of the most linked to websites on the internet. And now we know that marijuana is one of the most popular Google search terms in the United States. We found that out last week. But your work at the Huffington Post and other sites like Alternet show that marijuana information is particularly resonating with the online news reading population out there.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. These sort of stories end up being very popular online. Once again, there is this massive market of individuals looking for information about marijuana, and they're looking away from the mainstream media to find this information. So it's not surprising to me that when these sort of op-eds and commentaries go up online, that they become very popular, they receive tons of feedback, they're linked to by, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of other sites. Oftentimes these are commentaries that editors at large print papers have ignored, that they've rejected, that they've said, you know, this is sort of an evergreen piece, I don't see room for it, or they say, you know, there's nothing new to say about marijuana anymore. We're going to take a pass on this. These, you know, oftentimes these are the same articles that these editors in the mainstream media have turned down. And then when they go online, you discover that literally, you know, tens of thousands of Americans want to download the story. My most recent commentary on alternet.org, which was talking about these 10 million arrests for marijuana, within its first week, received over 100,000 downloads. I've got to tell you, I've tried submitting that a similar commentary in the past to several mainstream media outlets, and it's been turned down every time, the same story.
Uh-huh. And, you know, why do you think that is? Why don't newspaper publishers note that marijuana is a top search term? And, you know, most of newspapers' effort to bring in new local subscribers, that comes from online activity these days.
You know, it's funny, as the print media is losing readership and the online media is gaining readership, you would hope that editors would be aware of things like the fact that, according to Google, Americans and Canadians are most likely to type marijuana into a keyword search because they want to read about marijuana. you know, maybe they'll get that message. There are some papers out there that their coverage on this issue is very good. But for the majority of papers, their coverage on the marijuana issue has never been good. Generally, the coverage isn't serious. It tends to be one-sided with a slant toward the government's point of view. And like I said, when you're trying to get real analysis and thought-provoking pieces about marijuana and about the enforcement of marijuana prohibition on the editorial page, most editors are not interested. They see this as an issue that, in their minds, has been played out. There's no more argument. There's no more debate over it. Let's move on and let's go to some other issue. You know, what we can tell by the success of these commentaries online and by this recent Reuters story that's analyzing what sort of search terms Americans are typing in the search engines, that, in fact, the editors of these papers are missing the boat. They're not reading the needs of their public well or accurately at all, and that's why we're having so much success online. And when, as I said, it's much more difficult to break into the print media. Doesn't mean it can't be done, and certainly I've done it, but it is much more difficult. And in those cases, it sometimes really does help who the messenger is. I think one of the reasons you've seen the success of this recent op-ed by Rick Steves, which appeared in the LA Times over the weekend. It was, Ben also appeared in the Hartford Current and several other pieces. Certainly, it is a powerful and persuasive op-ed, but, you know, in editors' eyes, it certainly helps that it's coming from Rick Steves.
Mm-hmm. And you co-wrote an article earlier this year with former Dallas Cowboys player and Normal Advisory Board member Mark Stepnoski regarding the Ricky Williams issue. So sometimes bringing in a co-author with a bit of local or even national name recognition, that can help get an article about marijuana published.
You know, it certainly helps out a lot, and it also helps out if you or the person you're co-writing a piece with has some local connection to the region or to the paper you're sending it to. You know, editors, they are inundated with requests and with pitches to run editorials and op-eds, and unless you can show a local or regional connection to that paper, most of the time editors aren't going to give it a second look, if they even give it a first look. So it is really important when you're trying to get your message out there that you think locally and that you start locally. You will have a much better chance getting your position out to your local area than you will trying to get it out nationally. Now, the one good thing, too, and you made me think of it when you mentioned the piece I did with Mark Stepnoski, is oftentimes when you can get a commentary in one of these major mainstream papers, other papers will pick up that commentary and run it as well. The piece that Mark Stepnoski and I wrote not only ran the Chicago Sun-Times, but following its publication in that paper, it actually ran in a number of smaller papers around the country. We're seeing that happening right now with Rick Steves' op-ed as well. So really, I would want to encourage people, if they're trying to write editorials or commentaries, to try and initially at least pitch to the mainstream media and some of the larger markets, because if you do, if they do pick you up, it's likely that that editorial or that op-ed will be seen by readers all over the country.
Righto. We're with Normal's senior policy analyst Paul Armentano and one of the nation's top writers on the subjects of marijuana science and legal reform. We have links to his articles up at normalaudiostash.com. Paul, we've been talking about pitching a finished article to websites and print publications, but let's talk a bit about the nuts and bolts of writing these pieces. Your articles are filled with information, statistics, and numbers, but you also take a very conversational tone and add a bit of tongue-in-cheek humor at times to engage the reader. So how important is that overall tone, perhaps adding that little element of humor in getting a piece published?
I think it really depends on your market. It depends on when you look on an editorial page and you're looking at a newspaper, try and get a sense of the tone of the commentaries that they run. Look at the syndicated columnists that they run and try to better discern what sort of tone they use. Look at the editorials that run that are written by the editorial staff of that paper and try and get an idea what sort of tone they use. Are they lighthearted? Are they always serious? And then if they have one or two staff writers that do generate columns, once again, try to pick up on what sort of tone they use, what sort of topics they like. I try to gear my op-eds and tailor my op-eds toward the editorial staff of the paper I'm pitching it to. If it's an editorial staff that leans conservative, I'll try to highlight politically conservative issues like fiscal responsibility. If it's an editorial staff that leans more liberal, maybe I'll talk about issues like human costs of the drug war. Really, it's a matter of having a good understanding of the paper and what they like to read and then giving it to them.
And when it comes to the websites like the Huffington Post and Alternet.com, are they more open to these types of editorials on the topic of marijuana? And the newspaper editors do get a lot of submissions out there, but these websites, they must get a massive amount of submissions every day. So how do you pitch to these online editors?
Well, you know, it's funny. The online editors may get more submissions, but conversely, they have more space. So they can run more of the submissions that they receive. So, you know, there again, it's a matter of knowing your audience, knowing how to get in touch with the right person. You know, particularly in cyberspace, you need to be very careful that you are actually sending your editorial to the person that will make a decision whether to run the editorial or not. You know, if you send it to the wrong place, it may never get to the editor, and you'll never get a shot at having it published at all. You know, one thing I do want to point out is that while Huffington Post and Alternet are two progressive online sites that, you know, their drug coverage is actually quite good, there's a number of progressive online sites that for whatever reason don't seem to touch this issue at all. Some of the editors that I've spoken to at some of these other websites have actually speculated that one of the reasons our commentaries do so well on the progressive sites that publish it is because so many of the, you know, alternative progressive sites, for whatever reason, won't touch the drug war issue with a 10-foot pole. So when you see a site like Alternet or a site like Huffington Post giving this some space, I mean, it gets a whole ton of eyeballs on it because that liberal-slash-progressive crowd does want to read about this, but for whatever reason, many of the more liberal magazines and some even of the liberal websites, for whatever reason, you know, still don't touch this issue.
And Paul, finally today, let me ask what might be in the works for you. What kinds of subjects are you looking to address in your future writing?
You know, I'm actually still working on getting out the message regarding this latest round of FBI data. I think there's a lot there. I think there's a lot more directions we can go in. One in particular is a notion that I've heard you talk about on the audio stash is this idea that the government, when it comes to marijuana arrests, seems to do whatever it can to play down the fact that every year they're surpassing their own records of how many people they've arrested. I think there's a story there. When we look at, say, marijuana eradication, which is going on right now around the country, it's harvest season, and, you know, you see this in California, you see it in Iowa, you see it in the Midwest, you know, headline after headline that says record amount of marijuana eradicated in such and such county this year, record amount of marijuana eradicated in California, camp officials say, and on it goes. They brag every time they make record seizures, but when it comes to literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans being arrested, they're mum. They don't say a word about that. They never promote the fact that they're arresting all these people, and they certainly never say word one about the fact that many of these people are winding up in jail. You know, why is that? Here you have an indication that the federal government is ashamed of their own policy. And I think that is actually an important point that we need to bring to light. And, you know, I'd like to do so in some of my future writing.
Righto, Paul. This has been an absolutely wonderful conversation today. I really appreciate you joining us to share some of these tips for other activists out there. This has really been great.
Good to be here, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Paul. Paul Armentano is Normal's senior policy analyst and one of the nation's top writers on the subject of marijuana science and legal reform. We have links to many of his articles up online at normalaudiostash.com. You can also read the important booklet Paul put together called Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. It's available for free online in PDF format. We have direct links to it from our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. Ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org.